Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
I'm proud to be Irish, yes.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Why?
Hello, everybody. Thanks for listening to Rockin' the Suburbs. I want to welcome you to another week of episodes. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I am Patrick Foster, and I want to welcome you to this tribute episode. We had some sad news last Thursday when it was reported that Shane McGowan from the Pogues had passed away at the age of 65 years old. So we wanted to take a minute and just touch on the life and work of Shane McGowan and have a few folks share some memories of his time on this planet. Shane McGowan was born on Christmas Day, 1957, in Pembury, Kent. He was the son of Irish immigrants. His father was from Dublin, and his mother was from Tipperary. And his mother, Therese, she was a typist, but had been earlier a singer and traditional Irish dancer and a model. Shane's father was a middle-class worker, and he worked in the offices of a department store and was a self-described roustabout. He was born in England, Shane was, but raised in Tipperary in Ireland until the age of six. And this information I've sort of cobbled together from various sources, including the source of all human knowledge and some books and things, just to give you some background on Shane's musical career. He was first publicly came to prominence in a photograph, as a matter of fact. He was attending a concert by The Clash in London, and his earlobe was damaged by a bassist from another group. And a photographer took a picture of him with blood on his face and his shirt, and it made papers under the sensationalist headline, Cannibalism at Clash Gig. He was instrumental in forming a band called the Nipple Erectors, later the Nips, in 1976. They played their first gig early in 1977. That band released three singles and then recorded a demo for Polydor Records that was produced by Paul Weller of The Jam. There was a single that was released from that session on a small label. And after that, the band announced they would disband after one final gig in March of 1980. McGowan, an artist, Shane Bradley, had formed the Nipple Erectors, the Nips, and they did reform the band later in 1980, but just for a short time. And the lineup they used actually included James Friendly on guitar and John Moss on drums. This lineup played a gig in December of 1980 with The Jam, and that was their final show. John Moss went on to some success with a band called Culture Club as the drummer. And Shane Bradley was important in this phase of McGowan's musical development because she did bring in some Irish influences and some traditional music influences, which, of course, that is what James Fearnley and McGowan and Spider Stacy and James Finer formed a group in 1982, first known as Pogue Mahone. And they played the first gig in October of 1982. And by the end of that month, Cato Reardon and Andrew Rankin had joined on bass and drums, respectively. Band The Pogues, they played pubs and clubs in London. They released a single called Dark Streets of London on their own, and began to get a reputation for their live performances, and their single was played on BBC Radio. I think John Peel was a champion of the group. They came to the attention of Stiff Records and other media when they opened for The Clash in 1984. They shortened their name to The Pogues, partly due to, according to the source of all human knowledge, BBC censorship following complaints from Gaelic speakers in Scotland. Their first album, Red Roses for Me, came out in October 1984. They went on to release four more albums, Rum, Sodomy, and the Lash in 1985, produced by Elvis Costello, But I Should Fall from Grace with God in 1988, Peace and Love in 1989, and Hell's Ditch in 1990. Following the success of their classic single, Fairy Tale of New York, which has become a Christmas staple, the band was riding at its commercial peak. But McGowan became increasingly unreliable and difficult to deal with. He missed part of the 1988 Tour of America. He didn't want the band to promote their album, Hell's Ditch. And finally, in 1991, the band kicked McGowan out of the group following a legendarily chaotic performance in Japan. And for a while, the vocals were taken over by one Joe Strummer. After he was kicked out, Shane formed a new band, Shane McGowan and the Popes, that recorded two albums, a live album, and toured all over the world. In 2001, the band reformed for a Christmas tour. And by 2004, they had reformed and played sporadically for the next decade, including touring the United States and doing shows all over the world. And Shane retired from the group, and the group kind of retired itself around that time. And he made various appearances through the rest of his life for charity and collaboration appearances and other things, and definitely struggled a lot with his health. Not only due to the effects of his drinking, lifelong drinking, but due to a fall and due to just basically his frail nature, which did result as a result of some of the substance abuse problems he suffered during his life. McGowan began drinking at age 5, apparently, when his family gave him Guinness to help him sleep. And his father frequently took Shane to the local pub while he drank with his friends. Right, Streams of Whiskey from Red Roses for Me, the remarkable debut album from the Pogues. And may hear a mention of a Pogues album coming up in these comments from Kurt Gallagher. Kurt, thank you very much for getting in touch. And let's hear what Kurt has to say.
Hey, Rockin' the Suburbs people. It's Kurt Gallagher calling from the suburbs of New York City. I'll tell you three quick, I'll try to make them quick, Shane McGowan stories. I was working at a comedy club when the album If I Should Fall From Grace With God came out, and we used to play it every night. I was an assistant manager, and the manager and I would put that album on every night at the end of the show when the wait staff was cleaning up the room and settling their checks and everything. We would put that album on the PA, and it was just, you know, gave a burst of energy to the staff, and we loved it. And the owner of the club, who was really into music, he and his wife used to do jingles in the 70s, and this was in, I don't know, 1989 or so. Anyways, he said when he heard the Pogues, he said it sounded like a cross between the Clancy Brothers and Louie Louie, which I thought was a really good comment. But anyways, we played that album every night for about 2 months. And after a while, the wait staff started to give us a little friction. And towards the end, at one point, I think one of the waitresses threatened to kill me if I ever played that album again. But I think we might have played it a couple more times after that anyways. My brother and my wife and I went to see the Pogues on the night before St. Patrick's Day at the Palladium and down in the East Village. It's a big nightclub. And Black 47 was opening, and we used to see Black 47 at Patty Riley's every Tuesday night. They were like the house band, and we went to see Black 47 every Tuesday. We knew the guys in the band. They were opening up for the Pogues at the Palladium, and it was a huge show. Like I said, the day before St. Patrick's Day, my little brother Spencer lined up at 3:30 so we could get a prime spot, and I met him there after work. I got there, I don't know, around 6 or so, and then my wife joined us later. But we were all there at the almost at the front of the line, and we went in, stood there, and watched Black 47, which was a lot of fun. The crowd was kind of indifferent because they didn't really know. A lot of the people came from other boroughs and didn't really know Black 47. But anyways, when the Pogues hit the stage, Shane comes out. He's got a plastic gallon, like a milk gallon container filled with beer in one hand. He has some sort of mixed drink and a cigarette in the other hand, and is managing to hold the microphone and sing songs like that. But as soon as the Pogues hit the stage, the sound was just freaking glorious. But what happened was we were up front and the crowd just started pushing and pushing and pushing, and there was nowhere to go but up. So all these like soccer hooligans are up in the air above us, and we're getting kicked in the head by all these Doc Martens. And I think we stuck it out for like 3 or 4 songs. But once each one of us got kicked in the head, we decided it was time to get out of there. So we went back to the bar and watched the rest of the show on the videos. But the sound was just amazing, and they were everything you would expect from the Pogues. The last story is, I went to see at the Beacon Theater, I went to see the Pogues with Joe Strummer as lead singer. Shane was having a rough patch, and he got kicked out of the band for a little while, and they used Joe Strummer as a replacement. And I had never seen The Clash, and it was really exciting to see Joe Strummer. I was in the 3rd or 4th row, and the Pogues are there, and out comes Joe Strummer doing his, you know, telly thing and strumming like he did with The Clash and singing those songs. But there were some soccer hooligans behind us, and they did not appreciate it, and they started booing Joe. And I felt so bad. I just wanted to see the guys from the Pogues and Joe Strummer. But, you know, after like 5 or 6 songs, my brother and I decided that we sort of agreed with the soccer hooligans. It just wasn't really working after a while, and I think we left the show early. It was a thrill to be that close to Joe Strummer and to see the Pogues again, but without Shane, it just wasn't happening. So those are my 3 New York City Pogues stories from the late 80s, early 90s. So many great memories and so many hours listening to those guys, and they always put a smile on my face, and I'll miss Shane. Thanks, everybody. Can't wait to hear everyone else's stories.
Sang me a song that was pure as the breeze on a road leading up Glenavie. I sat for a while at the crescent finnow where young lovers would meet when the flowers were in bloom. Heard the men coming from the fire at Chiron, their hearts in Tipperary, wherever they go. Take my hand and dry your tears, babe. Take my hand, forget your fears, babe. There's no pain, there's no more sorrow. They've all gone in the years, babe. Sat for a while by the gap in the wall, found a rusty tin can and an old hurdy ball. When the cards been dealt and the rosary called, and a fiddle went shantung out. And the next time I see you, we'll down at the Greeks. There'll be whiskey and Sunday and tears in our cheeks. We're stupid to laugh and it's useless to bawl, but a rusty tin can and all early ball.
Cross between the Clancy Brothers and Louie Louie. I'm definitely going to get on board with that. That's fantastic. Thank you, Kurt, very much. It definitely inspired some passionate people at the Pogues concerts. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Liam McIndoe got in touch with a message, and he said, I'm not going to be able to record anything, and as I am stuck overseas right now. But as someone who lives in Ireland, I can say he is fiercely beloved here. He really is an example of the legacy of the great Irish writers mixed with the country's rebel heart, a true artist and truly Irish. Thank you, Liam, for that comment. Harris King got in touch, too, to say that he, like Kurt, saw the Pogues, and he sent a image of his ticket. In Freiburg is where the concert took place, at the Stadthalle. Forgive my pronunciation of that, Harris. The Pogues and special guests, and that was December 12th, 1991. And as Harris notes, but at the time, somebody named Joe Strummer was the lead singer. Nicholas Nygaard's got in touch to mention a song called Shane McGowan, from a Swedish band called Hashtpoken. I think I'm saying that right. Hashtpoken. They are a Swedish pop rock group from Gothenburg. And apparently their name means horse boy in Swedish, literally. They had an album called Caligula in the year 2008, and this was a top 15 hit in Sweden, and some of their other albums went on to be top 10s on 2010 and 2013. Don't ask me to pronounce those Swedish names, but there's a song on there for Shane McGowan. So why don't we cue that up right now? That really boiled with some punk spirit. I wasn't sure what to expect, but I really liked that. That was wired tight. Thank you, Nicholas, for sending in that song about Shane. Myself, I do a radio program every Monday and Thursday on Suburbs Radio. If you ever want to get a chance to pop over there and hear me between 5 and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, I do a show called Red Hot and Brew. And I was scheduled to go live with my program on Thursday. I had something else all lined up, but then the news broke earlier that day, and I decided to play a couple of Pogue songs. I played Streams of Whiskey, which we already heard, and I played and the band played Waltzing Matilda, and then I spoke a little bit about Shane and my experiences, and read a quote from a favorite writer of mine. So let me play that for you. Here's a little insertion of the Red Hot and Brewgram into the Rock in the Suburbs podcast. I apologize for any awkward pauses or oddness, but here is a sample of what that radio program sounds like, and specifically on the topic of Shane McGowan. Wherever you are tonight, if you're within the sound of my voice, if you're listening to this tomorrow or whenever you're hearing me speak, take a minute and pour one out for Shane McGowan, who passed today, the leader of the Pogues. Is no longer with us, and wherever he is, I'm sure he's already stepped up to the bar and taken a big, long drink from the Streams of Whiskey, because he suffered any new pain in his life. Rest in power, Shane McGowan. Rest in power. I want to read something that was written in The Guardian today by the excellent Guardian writer Alex Petridis.
He writes, quote, talking about Shane's songwriting, quote, but his real speciality was the kind of song that shone a light into ruined lives. A stall he set out on the Pogues' debut single, Dark Streets of London, self-released in 1984 when they were still called Pogue Mahone, Gaelic, for Kiss My Arse. It's a song that takes place against the backdrop of pubs and the bookies and draws on McGowan's own experience of mental illness. He had spent a period in a psychiatric hospital as a teenager. Every time that I look on the first day of summer, he sings, takes me back to the place where they gave me ECT and the drugged up psychos with death in their eyes. I'm buggered to damnation and I haven't got a penny. Bookies, pubs, drugs, mental illness, prunery, the grimness of London, this was the milieu which Shane McGowan would keep returning. The world that seems to lurk in the background of even his sweetest lyrics, including the beautiful love song A Rainy Night in Soho. The Standards Board dismissal of McGowan involves pointing out that he was educated at the same Tunbridge Wells prep school as plummy actor Dan Stevens and briefly at Westminster School, but that misses the point completely. He never set himself up as a poet of the working class. What he wrote about again and again was a kind of underclass of outcasts, the junkies, the drunks, the pimps, the whores, as the boys from County Hell put it, a subsection of society in which people from all walks of life can end up. Well written, and of course, a one-of-a-kind musical legacy left behind by Shane McGowan. Rest in power. I will rest in power. I'm going to pour one out right now, and I'm going to pour it into my throat, because that's what Shane would want me to do. That one's for you, Shane. Never knew that Irish music could be so wild and cool, man, and still contribute, you know, original instruments. And my God, it was so exciting to discover the Pogues. Like, who are these dudes? And then to see them live at the old 930 Club with about, I don't know, what that place held, 500 or 600 people, but maybe not even that many. To see him there live, and Mojo Nixon and Skid Roper opened up the show, which was a real treat. But just to see him on stage, he drank 2 bottles of red wine during their set, and their set was probably only about an hour or so. And straight out of the bottle, man, just keep them coming. It was a very, very powerful thing to see that band. And old friend of mine, Steve Healy, texted me today and asked, when was that show? And we didn't nail down the exact date, but we're pretty sure it was 87. So we'll have to look that up on Setlist FM. I'll get producer Charlie on that. Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, that was a sample of the Red Hot and Brewgram. And we did look it up, and we were off by a year. The concert actually took place on June 25th, 1986. At the old 930 Club. And was also way off on the capacity. It only held about 200 people. So it was full of 200 that night, and we were lucky to be two of those. And also, to bring some more perspective to this episode, Jim spoke with our good friend Murray Valeriano, who was a writer, comedian, and surfer from L.A., and he does a whole bunch of music-related stuff as well. So he's a great, great dude, and really like Murray a lot. He's been on the show. And he spoke to Jim about an encounter he had with Shane McGowan. So why don't we hear that one as a way of kind of summing everything up. Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Murray.
All right, this is Jim. I am here with Murray Valeriano, a comedian, a writer, and the host and producer of, for what it's worth, a comedy music quiz show that you can watch online at on YouTube, right?
Yes, absolutely. I'm doing another one. I did it live at the Improv, and I'm doing another live one in January.
That is very cool. That is very cool. Love the show. So, Murray, I want to talk with you because you had posted on Facebook a little story about an encounter with Shane McGowan.
Well, when I first moved to town, I worked in a restaurant here on Melrose in Los Angeles. I live in Los Angeles, California. And it wasn't a big celebrity hangout place. It wasn't one of those. But, you know, you live in Los Angeles where musicians, actors, artists, they all live. So you're going to cross paths with them. And right. This was just happened to be one of those nights. And it was a very, very popular restaurant at the time because we stayed open till 4 o'clock in the morning. And not, and you know, here in Los Angeles, we have, I don't know how it is in DC, but we have a 2 a.m. all alcohol off the table rule here. Right. And so very, very few restaurants and bars stayed open past that. So we would get the after hours crowd a lot, and they'd be, you know, hammered and stuff like that. And one night, the manager, who this manager kind of took over, ultimately, I think he drove this restaurant into the ground, but he was really just this New York tough guy. Wouldn't, you know, stand for anything. And he walked up to me one night and he goes, "Hey man, that guy on 212 is being really drunk and obnoxious. I want you to get him out of here." And again, like I've never gotten anybody out of here. Like I've never bounced. And I'm 20 whatever at this point, right? I'm like, who, that guy over there? And I look over and it's Shane McGowan. And I go, "That's Shane McGowan."
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes, "Who's that?" I go, "From the Pogues." And I go, and he goes, "I don't care. He's drunk and obnoxious." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's Shane McGowan." It's kind of what he's known for.
Yeah.
He's like, "I don't care. Get him out of here." And I'm like, "Oh man." So I walk over and he's, you know, he is exactly how you would picture him at that time in mid-90s, you know, still very thin, still unfortunate, dental work, right. You know, and just hammered. Just drunk. And I think he was drinking the champagne out of the bottle, mm-hmm. kind of drunk. And I would imagine he showed up there drunk because we didn't serve hard alcohol. And I'd been on the shift for a while. So I'd imagine he showed up there drunk. So I walk up to him and I'm like, "Hey man, I'm a big fan." Like, "I'm about to kick you out, but I'm a big fan," you know? And he's kind of just huddled, you know, like you would huddle and just drinking, and you just like snarling at me, and between the alcohol and the accent and my bad memory, I can't really remember what he was saying, but I just kept talking back to him back and forth, and I'm like, "Hey man, the manager wants you out of here. You like, you gotta go." And then he got really kind of just angry, and I was trying to talk him out of the tree, but when you're, you know, he's drunk and he's Shane McGowan, and
right.
You're not really going to do that. And then the manager came over, and you know, I really think this would have gone down different if the manager came over and wasn't such a jerk. And he was like, "Hey man, you're out of here. Go." Like, just sorry. And then just Shane was just like pushing the table back and like, "I've, you know, blah, blah, blah." He's like, "Get out of here. Go, go." And he like grabs the champagne and he's like, my manager's like, "Murray, walk him out." Like, what am I going to do if the guy takes a swing, right? Like, I'm going right. down. Like, how am I a bouncer here? And so we're walking him out, and we walk him out to the busy street, and he's literally stumbling and like holding onto the rail to stay up and spilling the champagne. And we stumble out to the street, and I'm like, "You know, I really am a fan, man. I really am." And he stumbles into the, he had a limo. He stumbles into the back of the limo, and Jim and every fan in here, you can relate to what I'm about to tell you. I'm sure I will never, ever forget the last thing he did. And he stumbles into his limo and he turns around to me in that just Shane McGowan snarl and pokes and gives me the two finger fuck off.
Right
to my face. And he closed his door and drove away. And I was like, "That was kind of cool."
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is what kind of impression did that leave on you as a fan?
We're kind of, as fans and even people who work in, you know, as a music writer, like you are, and podcasters, like we all are, we tend to kind of glorify that stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's still a disaster of a human being. You know right. what I mean? As great as an artist that he is, and it probably fed his art. So in a way, it's great, and I would not have wanted it to go any different unless he sang me a song.
You know what right, I mean? Right, unless, right.
But so like in a way, that's the kind of Shane McGowan story you want, I think. But when you really pull back the layers and remember that this is an actual person, it's a sad story, but it's a sad story of his whole life.
That's right. All right. Well, thanks very much, Murray, for sharing that story. Really appreciate it. And always great to talk with you. So.
Oh, it's always good to talk to you. And again, I'm a big fan of the show and stuff.
Oh, all the money I had, I spent it in good company. And all the harm I've ever done, alas, it was to none. And all I've done for once of wits, some memories.
Okay, that was The Parting Glass, and that was a B-side of the 12-inch version of the Dirty Old Town single, released in 1985, and Murray definitely had a story about partying and Shane McGowan, so thought that was appropriate. Thank you, Murray, very, very much for that tale, and wow, that sounds crazy. It really does. I want to thank everybody who contributed very, very much. Thanks, Jim, for speaking with Murray. Thank you, Murray. Thanks, Nicholas. Thank you, Liam. Thank you, Harris. And, of course, thank you, Kurt, for getting in touch and sharing your memories of Shane McGowan. His legacy, I believe, will last a long, long, long time. It's certainly burned into my memory banks, and I'm sure of millions of others. So we will raise a glass to Shane McGowan. Rest in power. We'll go out with some more music from the Pogues. We will take you back to your regularly scheduled Suburbs Podness tomorrow.
I met my love by the gasworks wall. Dreamed the dream by the old canal. I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Clouds are drifting across the moon. Cats are prowling on their beat. Springs a girl from the streets at night. Dirty old town, dirty old town.
So many great memories and so many hours listening to those guys, and I'll miss Shane.